is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Rolling on ESPN 1000 here till noon. Then it's Carmen and Yurko. Then Waddle and Sylvie. And then tonight, it's Hoodie. 312-332-3776. Brother Bill on Twitter says, at D. Zetterman, stop it already. Jay just wasn't a winner. He went to Miami, took over a 10-6 playoff team, and promptly went 6-10. John Tortorello says, hey, Capman, slow down. Well, Jay had a great defense. He had Hester and Knox as wide receivers. When he had B. Marsh, Bennett, and Jeffrey, his defense went down the tubes. Never had close to a complete team. You're lumping his whole time here into one team. John, all I know is this guy had all his freaking ability, and everyone was all excited except me and Rick Morrissey. I remember the day of the trade. We both hated it. And every year was an excuse. Every year. Didn't have this offense coordinator. We didn't have that. We didn't have this. We didn't have that. And they won one playoff game in his entire career here. Come on, man. Stop. Stop. 312-332-3776. I just thought Jay Cutler was the most overrated athlete to come through this town since I've been on the air in 25 years. That said, let's move on because the draft is right around the corner. It's going to happen. Bears have made some moves, and that means we get to talk to a great friend of this show. He's Mike Tannenbaum, two-time GM, two different teams, does great work on ESPN. He's also been an agent. He brings all different perspectives. Mike, first of all, are you healthy, safe, and your family okay?
Yeah, Cap, thanks so much for asking. I was very fortunate to get out of Bristol a couple of weeks ago, and I'm home safe and sound, and hope you and your family are the same.
God bless. So let's talk about what the Bears did. I was reading yesterday, Mike Sando wrote a really interesting article, and he talked to executives in the league who they were laying a case, one executive of, yeah, I know everyone thinks the Jimmy Graham contract's bad, but here's what they paid Greg Olsen, so it's not as bad as you think it is, and that Nick Foles was the only option because with no OTAs, probably no mini camp, we don't know what training camp's going to look like. He's a great guy. He knows the system and he knows the coaches, so he was the only option. But then Bill Barnwell writes today, why didn't you just get Newton or Dalton, not have to give up a draft pick, and they're going to be a lot cheaper. So where do you stand on what the Bears have done?
Yeah, a couple thoughts. Well, first of all, when you look at it from a big picture standpoint, Cap, it's interesting. There's only two quarterbacks that have signed this offseason, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay and Marcus Mariota in Vegas, where the quarterback didn't have some connection to the coaching staff, either the quarterback coach or in Teddy Bridgewater's case, going back a number of years. Just from a standpoint of what you're that was Joe Brady that was at New Orleans, and then obviously he came from LSU. But just with everything going on with the offseason program, you're seeing a lot of that. So I don't fault what Ryan Pace did in terms of trying to bring in somebody like Nick Foles. Now, I agree. I like Dalton. I like Cam Newton a lot. I also think that Cam Newton's a great fit for the Bear offense. So it's just a big trend we're seeing in the league right now. I think Foles is just a better quarterback than Trubisky. I don't think it's going to be close. I know other people said, hey, he'll be good for the room and all that. But at the end of the day, and we've talked about this before, Cap, your locker room is the ultimate check and balance. And I'll tell you that you have a championship defense on one side of the ball, and they're looking at Trubisky as he's not going to get us to where we want to go.
In terms of putting together a draft, whether it's the Bears or anyone else, this is uncharted territory. How do you put a draft board together knowing, okay, I'm in Miami or I'm in Detroit. I've got one of these top five picks. There's this guy there that's incredibly accurate, but he had a hip injury. His name's Tua Tagovailoa. I can't bring him in and have my doctors do all the scans and all the stuff that I would like to do before I potentially risk the next decade of my franchise and my career. How would you evaluate that?
Yeah, Cap, we just talked about that on Get Up This Morning. You can't take him. It's irresponsible to take two in the top 10. Look, he's a great talent. He should have an unbelievable career if he's healthy. But when you talk about some of this guaranteed money, Kyler Murray, for example, last year, $35 million in fully guaranteed money. Unless your doctors, your training staff, your whole medical department can work out the player, see where he is, see how, if they're swelling, range of motion, flexibility, you can't take the player. It's irresponsible. I don't care how many scans you could see or videos you can watch. It's totally different than when you actually get to work with the player. So I just feel like if you're in the top 10, you got to take something that's a little bit more reliable and someone that has a very clean track record.
So if you were putting a draft board together, and I saw today, like, the Saints are going to work out of a brewery that the Benson family owns. I don't know why they wouldn't be in their own facility, but how would you put a draft board together? Would smaller college guys that you did not have a chance to get to know as well as you might like possibly now fall out of the draft because Mike Tannenbaum's in the draft room? He's like, yeah, you know what? I've seen that kid from Oklahoma or Alabama. I'll take him.
Yeah, I think you could put the draft board together, you know, through obviously using virtual technology and video conferencing. But I do think at the end of the day, Cap, if we're sitting here in 3 years, we're going to see good backup players from big schools get overdrafted, and we're going to see other players that are from smaller schools that either were waiting on their pro day or these 30 visits where players could come into your facility get underdrafted. And basically what's going on is you'd rather take a Johnson & Johnson stock that's a blue chip that has a great background, a little bit more conservative, than take a riskier sort of investment because you just don't know. And I've been there. And when you have to look your head coach in the eye and you have to talk to your owner, you want to check every box before you turn that card in. So it may be Tua's hip, or it could just be a small school where one of your coaches hasn't seen the player yet. You just don't want to take that risk, especially early in the draft.
So I heard a rumor that the Green Bay Packers have targeted Jordan Love, the Utah State quarterback, and that their plan is Aaron's not going anywhere. We're going to do with him like we did with Aaron when Brett was there. Is that an intelligent plan for teams that have older quarterbacks, whether you're Pittsburgh or Green Bay or Seattle, that's someone that's been there for a while, bring a guy in and go, you know what? I'm going to take a guy in this draft. I can't take chances, so I'll bring this guy and let him sit and learn.
Absolutely. I was fortunate earlier in my career. We were at the Jets, and we drafted Chad Pennington. We had two quarterbacks that we liked in Vinny Testaverde and a guy named Ray Lucas, and the best thing we did was draft Chad Pennington. He sat for a year, and obviously the rest is history. And I would tell you, like, when you look at what Kansas City did, they had a good quarterback in Alex Smith. They drafted a great one in Patrick Mahomes. And people forget, Patrick Mahomes sat Cap for 15 games of his rookie year. But between Andy Reid's coaching and the influence of Alex Smith, look at the career that Mahomes is going to have. So if I'm Green Bay and I can win for today with Aaron Rodgers and develop for tomorrow with, let's say, it's Jordan Love of Utah State, I think that's really smart.
So when the Bears drafted Mitchell Trubisky and they traded up a pick and they gave up stuff to get him, Ryan Pace was on this show and he said, my goal is that he does not play one game as a rookie. I want him to sit. He's raw. He'll learn from Mike Glennon or whoever, and that's how we're going to do it. And then 4 games in on a team that had, no matter how well he played, no chance of winning a title or making a playoff run, they completely reversed course. Do you think that affected Mitch's development?
I do, because I thought mental toughness was a concern when you spent time with Mitchell Trubisky. So not putting him in a chance to be successful, I think, can hurt a player, depending on how mentally tough they are. And I think what we're going to see is almost like a new norm in a global standpoint. When you look at, you go back to Josh Rosen, top 10 pick, one and done. And now when you look at a couple quarterbacks in particular, Baker Mayfield, remarkably, is on his third head coach already. Dwayne Haskins, inherited by Ron Rivera. Daniel Jones, inherited by Joe Judge. We're going to see some of these younger quarterbacks have a much smaller leash in terms of they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt because they've been inherited. And a guy like Trubisky, because he didn't have the infrastructure when he first started, I think that could possibly shorten his career. And candidly, if I was representing Trubisky, I may not say this publicly, but if Nick Foles beat him out for the next 10 years, that may not be the worst thing. Now, in all probability, that means he's going to have to move on and probably go someplace else. But he's still young enough where he could probably recover from what he's learning in Chicago. I just don't know if this is the right quarterback for the right team right now because of the way the defense is made. And Foles is just a much more productive player if Foles is healthy.
So we've learned this morning, because Ian Rappaport reported that Foles restructured his deal, and instead of it being a $21 million cap hit this year, he's got The same guarantee, $21 million, but it's spread over 3 years, and it's only an $8 million hit. Does that change how you look at the position in Chicago, that it could be more of a competition because it's not $21 million going to that guy?
Not necessarily, because, I don't think it's going to be close. Foles is the better player. Someone's going to have to show me where, either on tape, statistically, what's better about Trubisky's game than Foles. When Foles is healthy, he won a Super Bowl, and if Alshon Jeffrey doesn't drop a pass, they probably go back to the championship game in Philadelphia. He still may be the starter there. He goes to Jacksonville, obviously gets hurt there. So I think he's the better player. The fact that the guaranteed money is stretched over a couple more years cap, I don't think that's going to affect the analysis. And again, I think this is very similar to what we saw a year ago in Tennessee, where you had a guy in Mariota who was drafted there, had some, you know, let's just be fair, inconsistencies and up and down early in his career. Tannehill came in, and he was clearly the better guy. And I think that's going to happen here in Chicago, where you have a guy in Trubisky that's been here, but over time, the better player is going to play, and that's going to be Nick Foles.
How good do you think Tampa Bay will be? Tom Brady's going to come in, obviously have a lot of sway in what they do offensively, but he's also working with a really good offensive coach. What do you think Tampa will be like?
If they could get a right tackle with the 14th pick, I think they have a chance to be really good. When you look at their skill players, they're really well suited. You know, they got Chris Godwin, Mike Evans on the outside. They have two really good tight ends in Cam Brate and O.J. Howard. Their running back, Ronald Jones, is okay. That's something you could obviously address along the lines. The offensive line is good, but they really do need a right tackle. If they get that done, I think they'll have a chance to win the NFC South. And, boy, that division, you know, Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer. Obviously, so is Brady. And Cap, you know, Matt Ryan may or may not be. And I don't think our sport has ever seen three active Hall of Famers in the same division.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. All right, last thing. Today is the anniversary of the Chicago Bears acquiring Jay Cutler. Now, I was not on board with that trade the day it went down, but there were a lot of people in this town that were, oh, my God, we just got this amazing quarterback. He won one playoff game here, and it has just, for whatever reason, never worked out, and he's this big hot-button topic. What did you think of Jay as a quarterback when you look at his career here?
Yeah, well, and again, I had him in Miami for a year, so I would say it was disappointing from ability and in terms of production. I think he was a guy that had A-minus ability, and his career was not close to where it could have been, including Chicago and certainly the year we had him in Miami. Now, to give him the benefit of the doubt, when I had him, you know, we got him off the couch when he was, you know, working for Fox Sports. So, but even in Chicago, I just felt like, you know, you go by what you see, you go by playoff wins, and I think Cap from, you know, when they traded for him from Denver, you know, the expectations were through the roof, and I don't think he lived up to it.
Hey, man, appreciate you always taking time for us. I love talking football with you. Please stay safe and healthy, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Cap. Thanks. You too.
Be good. There you go. That's our guy. That is Mike Tannenbaum, the former GM of the Jets for a long time, and then with the Dolphins as well. 312-332-3776. Baseball got it wrong today. What a shock. That's next.
Sports talk while you're on the clock. Cap and Company.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Steve Miller Band. I love this song. Love Steve Miller Band. 312-332-3776. We are running a really cool contest here. We're trailing on this show right now. And as Danny so eloquently put it yesterday, we can handle losing to Waddle. We cannot handle losing to Sylvie. Carmen or
you.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Are connected.
It's not about who you know.
You know people.
Who would you say is the most famous person in your phone?
You know people who are known. Can you get them to call us?
I enjoy American football. I actually dated a player once, but he wasn't my type, so I set him up with my friend Giselle.
ESPN 1000's biggest name drop. the bigger the name.
I see we're dropping names three at a time.
The bigger the prize. Which celebrity can you get to call us?
So, Danny, tell everybody the details of what they need to do to win a really cool $750 gift pack.
Super easy. All you have to do is, if you know a big celebrity, that would be the best. Call in a favor. Ask them to call us, 312-332-3776. If you don't know a celebrity, we're finding the best means of getting to them is tweet them. So get the biggest name celebrity possible to call the shows. Any of them. Cap, Carmen Yurko, Waddle and Sylvie. We prefer 9 to 12 Cap because for some reason we've decided to keep score, even though that isn't part of the contest. Then next Friday, April 3rd, our boss, Mike Thomas, will decide which show, which listener had the biggest celebrity call in. That listener will win a great prize. It's a $500 online gift card to Meats by Lins. You're also going to get a $250 online gift card to Club Hawthorne from Hawthorne Racecourse. It's really easy. All you got to do is get a big name celebrity to call us. Cap will do all the heavy lifting by interviewing that celebrity, and we'll go from there.
All right. We'll see where it goes.
Waddle and Sylvie added two more names to the list yesterday. They had Jim Palmer on.
Yeah.
And they had Mark DiCarlo on.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, don't poo-poo the stars.
Oh.
Hey, don't poo-poo. Like, oh, okay. Maybe those two guys are not going to win the contest per se.
Yeah, I can promise you they're not.
But they had more big stars call yesterday than we did.
No doubt.
How many did you get yesterday?
Zero.
I'm looking at the scoreboard.
So they're trying. They're trying. We're all trying.
I got to talk to you two.
Yeah, no, I know. But I am not a star. Danny is a star. But listen, we're saying where everyone's trying. Don't hate on the Waddle and Sylvie program.
And Mark DiCarlo, that's a big name.
I'm looking at the scoreboard, and it goes Cap, Waddle and Sylvie. Waddle and Sylvie, Waddle and Sylvie, Waddle and Sylvie, Waddle and Sylvie, Cap. And that's for the American Airlines spokesgirl, so I don't even count that one. Waddle and Sylvie, Waddle and Sylvie.
Yeah, they have the lead.
Listen, for our Cap and Company fans out there, the challenge has been set. If you can try and land Sheryl Crow to call into this show, that would be the all-time best.
Right, you'd win the $750, plus I'm throwing a cool C-note right on top of it.
Yeah, because Cap was asked to get drinks with Sheryl Crow in his past, and he said no. And we need confirmation on this story from Sheryl Crow. So why not have a better opportunity to have our listeners tweet at Sheryl Crow to try and convince her to call into our radio station? That's the challenge.
Yeah. So she is at Sheryl Crow. She got
a lot of good efforts yesterday. A lot of good efforts. Let's keep trying.
Yep.
Let's keep going for it.
Firing away at her Twitter. Just keep inundating, and maybe we'll be surprised. Dan, we'll go to line one at Sheryl Crow. That'd be so freaking amazing if she called in.
It really would.
How would the interview go, though? Like, I was trying to play this through yesterday in my head. Like, after the initial, like, hey, Sheryl Crow, remember me? I asked you out. I had bad hair back then.
Oh, I didn't ask her out.
You asked me out. Okay, but after we get past that initial, like, uncomfortable but yet mandatory, remember that time you asked me out and I turned you down? I could have been Kid Rock or Eric Clapton or Owen Wilson or Lance Armstrong, but not. Then what are you going to talk to her about? Because no offense to you, Uncle Cappy,
yeah,
you are not necessarily the world's best with pop culture and music.
Yeah.
So what, like, let's pretend Chris is Sheryl Crow.
Mm-hmm.
What would you ask him? Or her.
Hey, Sheryl, remember that time?
I said after that. After that.
Just a sec. Sorry, Siri.
Oh, that my was God. Siri. Are you a professional or not, man?
What's going on there?
That was Siri. I would probably, first of all, I would ask her about her health. She had a health crisis that she went through. Got past that. I would then ask her about the biggest inspirations to get her to where she is today. What is it like being a celebrity at your level? I mean, you're a major freaking star. What is that like every day to be Sheryl Crow? The pressure that's there to be Sheryl Crow.
What about the music? Ask her about the music.
I would. Who's the inspiration for every day is a winding road?
Recording songs?
When you sit down and write, do you go, all right, I'm writing now, or is it just it hits you? Hey! Pull the car over. I got to go home. I got to write. I just got an inspiration. Like, how does that work? Like, I'm curious.
Oh, man, please call. Please someone connect Sheryl Crow to this show. That would be the best.
That would be the absolute freaking greatest if she called.
Would you walk off after that? Would that be the end of David Kaplan's career, like your Jordan in 93? Would you just say, sayonara?
Mic drop.
Yeah, you'd be out. Would that be the end?
Be amazing.
Danny, do you think he would do that? Do you think that would be the end of Kaplan's career? If he lands the show, Crow?
I hope so.
Interview?
I hope so.
Oh, that's mean.
I'm just kidding.
I compared you to Jordan, so at least I'm giving you credit there. I'm saying walking out on top.
Mic drop.
Pardon the expression.
That would be just so funny if she completely co-signed and said, yeah, I actually did ask you out for drinks and you never called.
There's no way.
And I've been thinking about it till this day.
There's
I've been worried.
There's no way she remembers that. You guys are crazy.
No, she might. She might.
She might remember being in Wrigley Field. That's about the most she remembers.
She gave me her freaking number. You guys have seen it.
Yeah, no, I've seen it, and I've tried to hit. You've had the phone open in front of me, and I've tried to lunge at it to hit the call button, and you, like, pull it away as quick as possible. I think we should FaceTime her during a break.
That would be so great.
And see if she answers. And I'll have a video running of us doing it, so then we can show people whether or not she answers.
That would be so great.
Yeah, so of great. Course it would be great.
A couple of other things. What did you think about when we were talking with Mike Tannenbaum? He's all in on the Nick Foles thing and all off the Trubisky thing. He also was not all in on the Jay Cutler thing. Not all in. Disappointing is what he called him. Disappointing.
You want to plant your flag in that he agreed with
it's
you
amazing.
On Jay Cutler?
Really
but what,
amazing.
What about when he questioned Mitch Trubisky two times and both times you changed the subject?
No, you told me not to only stick to Bears, so I moved on.
Okay, as soon as he poo-pooed Mitch, you couldn't have gotten away from that quick enough. How about he said that many believe that Mitch isn't mentally tough? That's something we've said 100 times,
right.
And you always want to poo-poo it. This is a guy that's probably as tight as anybody in NFL circles.
Agreed.
Knows the inside of many, many different front offices, and he's telling you that many believe Mitch isn't mentally tough.
Yeah, I've heard it. As I said, if he doesn't prove it this year in training camp, he loses his job and he's out of here.
It sounded from listening to Tannenbaum like Mitch lost the job already. I mean, if you listen to Mike Tannenbaum talk, and obviously he's got an educated opinion, he's not necessarily in the know. But he makes it sound like Nick Foles is this team's starting
quarterback. What did you think about what he said about Tua, Chris, when he said it would be malpractice if you're a team in the top 10 to draft Tua Tagovailoa? He said, I'm not questioning his ability. You have no idea if that guy's healthy.
My response would be, okay, good luck to you. I mean, really?
You're guaranteeing the guy?
Hey, then, if you're the Colts, you're the Raiders, you're the 49ers, you're sitting in the teens. You're waiting to draft. Yeah. Okay, congratulations. Good luck with you because they are going to take him. If he falls at Jacksonville at 9, if he falls, okay, good luck. Listen, if you're going to base everything off the fact because of the coronavirus outbreak that you can't go specifically work this player out with your medical team, to not believe in what everything else you've been told about him, what's been out there. If the NFL does a pool workout with him where they have a designated NFL physical health expert go make sure everything, all the grades kind of check out, something which they could do before the draft. Okay, pass on. Good luck. What's your name? Seriously.
That's a hell of a risk, though. As he said, you're guaranteeing a guy at the top of the draft $35, $40 million. That's a hell of a risk to tell your owner, well, we didn't get the chance to do all the homework, and we rolled the dice, and it didn't work.
But so is drafting Joe Burrow number one when you know he may not be the more talented quarterback, and he was a kid who was older than everyone else in college football last season, who didn't really go to class last season because he already graduated. So he basically played professional football for a year in college football with wide receivers who were always open. Okay, fine. If that's what you want to do, I would not just throw away the idea that Tua Tagovailoa is just not going to be good because you didn't get the chance to see his medicals before the draft. Well, that's what you're doing. If you pass on him and he turns out to be a good quarterback or a great quarterback, you just screwed your franchise.
He just said it's too big a risk in the top 10 to take him. That's all he said. He said, you can't do your due diligence.
Yeah, I heard what he said.
And the millions of dollars at stake, you're rolling the ultimate dice.
I heard what he said, and my response was, good luck to you. Respectfully, good luck to you.
All right. Ozzie Guillen just texted me. He said, hey, I'm going to call in. I want to talk about Ed Farmer for a couple minutes. So
he can't win the prize.
Ozzie Guillen is going to call in to the show. and then we'll get back to the calls. 312-332-3776. We'll be right back.
Did you miss some Cap and Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Rolling on ESPN 1000. We're going to talk to Ozzie Guillen in a little bit. Get his thoughts on the passing of Ed Farmer. Farmio passed away last night at the age of 70. He had been ill for a very, very long time. It was not corona related. He was in a hospital in Los Angeles and had succumbed to a very long battle. So our deepest sympathies to his family. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Tom Brady has found a new home, Tampa Bay. Now he's found a new place to live. He is, as the Tampa Bay Times, Rick Stroud wrote, he had plenty of options on where he decided to live. He chose St. Petersburg. He is moving his family into a sprawling 30,000-square-foot mansion on Davis Islands, built by Yankees Hall of Fame shortstop Derek Jeter. Home is worth approximately $25 million. The rent's expected to be $100,000 a month. It features 7 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, an entertainment room, billiards room that wraps around a pool with 2 boat lifts providing access to Tampa Bay. How about that? Crazy. All right. Ozzie Guillen, my friend, kind enough to join us for a few minutes just to reminisce about the late Ed Farmer. Ozzie, good morning. First of all, how are you and how is your family?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, family's doing good. It can be better. It could be worse, but we're doing great. Thank God.
God bless. So Ed Farmer passed away last night at the age of 70. He had been sick for a long, long time. You got to know him very well because he was the voice of the team for almost 30 years. What do you remember about Ed?
I'll be honest with you, it's kind of sad. You know what I mean? I've been following this for the last couple of days, and I talked to Jerry, and talked to friends, very close friend to him. Well, you know, my family's been sick since he's born, the day born. you know what I mean? He's been sick for a long time. He just battled a lot of sickness and what I remember, I can make a book about Ed Farmer. I know Farmer, and he was, you know, scouting the Baltimore Orioles. And we spend so much time together. We play golf, we eat, we spend a lot of fly and clubhouse. I do the show every day with him. You know, the relation we have, it was amazing. By the way, when he told me, when I got the TV show, he told me, he said, hey, when they ask you about the TV show, tell you don't like it. Because everybody wanted to have you. wow, Farmio.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad. It's sad because this guy, if you know him, you can say anything bad about him. He's a very Catholic, very a friend with everyone. So many great things. You know, family knows so many people, and he's so good guy. Can I tell you something very quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. We play in Washington. And D.C., I think Obama was running, or just president or something like that. And we couldn't take off in 3 hours because they closed the area because the president coming in or somebody coming in, and we could not take off. Farmio they asked me about it. I told Farmer, said, no, we can't take over now. We got to wait 3 hours here. Farmer said, no way. Wait a minute. Let me make a phone call. And he did. And we take it off in 10 minutes. And that was kind of Farmer. Farmer know everyone around the world. Baseball people love him. People will remember him because he was the voice of the Chicago White Sox. But you know him very well. You know him, who he was, day in and day out. You say, guy, you can. I just told Junior last night. I said, talk about Farmer. I could write a book about him, a great one, a very positive book, very outgoing book. He's what behind you in the tough time. He just makes your life very, very, very happy and very positive.
He was a guy who I got to know very well because I was around the baseball scene here in Chicago. And whether you broadcasted for the Cubs like I did or for the White Sox like he did, he was just a good dude, man, who always wanted to talk to people.
He does. He does. He's just, I remember one day I have a Foot Joy. I play golf with him. And I had this pair of shoes. And I go, man, this is nice shoes. I said, you like it? I said, yeah. All right, you can have it tomorrow. And I was all over him. I go to the ballpark laughing and making fun of him and tell people what he just say. Next day, I have 10 and a half pair of shoes the same way I like it. I don't know how he do that, but he talked to every. You know what reminded me a little bit? Ernie Banks. You know, like he said hi to everyone. Yep. He did along with everyone. It's not like Hawk. Hawk, some people hate it. Some people like it, like me. But Farmio was a piece of a guy. He's been in love with everyone. You talk about everyone, Priest. He always worried about people, always care about people. He brings stuff to the airplane. He just always shared life with people. I know for a fact, few people around me, my kids, my wife. Mm-hmm. They've gone through a tough time now, the last 3 days, because him, how much they're going to miss him day in and day out. You see, it's tough in life. I called Jerry, I sent a text to Jerry, say, how Farmer is doing? Oh, he's doing, he's not going to last too long, but somebody sent me a text an hour later. He passed away. Then I sent text to say, no, it was yesterday was, all day we back and forth and tried to figure out what it was, what he's doing. I text a couple of people from the White Sox, and I know exactly how White Sox family feel right now because everyone loves Farmer, especially in the front desk. You walk around when on there and he's checking, he say hi to everyone in the front desk. Farmer, because every time, remember when I died, people always going to say, man, what a great guy Ozzy was. Well, I wasn't. But Farmer, yes. Farmer, he was a great man. And you're talking with somebody with uniform on, Farmer can be like Jim Tomey type. Everybody love him. Everybody respect him. Everybody want to talk to him. Even you don't want to talk to him, he will talk to you. That's what how Farmer was, how great he was.
Did you ever face him as a hitter?
No, wow. I play against him in AAA.
Uh-huh.
And he was pitching for Philadelphia Phillips. And he bring that thing up. I said, man, if I'm in AAA, I kill everyone. And I did. I got a couple hits against him. And he struck me out once. It was very hard to do. Strike me out. But he struck me out. But I got a couple hits against him. He played in my country in Venezuela in Winter League. We play against each other in AAA. I come to the big league. When I came to the big league, it was scout. And for Baltimore Orioles, and he loves people so much, they let him scout the team in the clubhouse manager. That was in the clubhouse, the umpire's clubhouse. And I walk in to watch the game TV, family there, writing his note. Not that many people, not that many scouts, I don't think anyone can do that. And Farmer was so grateful and people love him so much and respect him so much. When he was cold, he called down there. I do it from there.
Well, I just wanted to get you on for a couple minutes just to reminisce a little bit. You know how much I love you and your family. And I'm so glad you and I get to work together, and I think you're the greatest, man.
Thank you, brother. I sent to you. By the way, the only reason I call you because you the man, Cap. Besides that, I don't want to talk to no media.
You are the best. I love you.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
God bless. There he is, the great Ozzie Guillen. That's my guy. And, you know, he's the White Sox manager, and he and I would tangle sometimes. We would debate, and he now works with me on TV, and we become super close, super close. And I absolutely adore that guy. And if you got the chance, like I get, to work around him, he's an amazing man. His kids are awesome. His wife, his family is just grade A, and that guy is special. Special. I wish he was managing again. God, he's so much fun. Anyway, 312-332-3776. We've teased it. We haven't gotten to it. Danny is going to enlighten us with it. Baseball got it wrong. They got it wrong. Again, we'll discuss it next.
It's Cap and Co. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. And ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
On ESPN 1000 with Danny and Chris. I'm David Kaplan. We are here for you every morning, good Lord willing, at 9 a.m. And please tell your smart speaker, hey, Alexa, play ESPN Chicago. Hey, Google, play ESPN Chicago. We appreciate you. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. So, Daniel Zetterman, we were talking about Major League Baseball getting it wrong again, and it's in relation to the Houston Astros, correct?
Correct. ESPN's Buster Olney is reporting that former Astros manager A.J. Hinch and ex-Astros general manager Jeff Luhnow will fulfill their one-season suspensions for the team's sign-stealing scandal, even if no baseball is played in 2020. So even if we do not play a single game in the year 2020, their one-year suspensions will be fulfilled. I think that is crap.
Yeah, completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. If there's no business being done, then their suspension should be on hold. And whenever it resumes, that's when they start serving. Again, that's just baseball screwing up. Brutal. Brutal. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Again, we've got a biggest name contest going on where you get the biggest celebrity you can get to call in. We've had a bunch call in this week. And if you get a big name and it's the biggest one that our bosses determined that called in all week, you win a $750 gift pack, including $500 to Meats by Lynn's, which supplies all the top restaurants in Chicago.
Hi there.
You.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Are connected.
It's not about who you know.
You know people.
Who would you say is the most famous person in your phone?
You know people who are known. Can you get them to call us?
I enjoy American football. I've actually dated a player once, but he wasn't my type, so I set him up with my friend Giselle.
ESPN 1000's biggest name drop. The bigger the name.
I'd say we're dropping names three at a time.
The bigger the prize. Which celebrity can you get to call us?
So we've got somebody on the line, and he's from East Chicago, Indiana. He was a great basketball player. He's involved in one of the biggest trades ever, and he's wildly more successful as a businessman than he was as a player, and he was a hell of a player. Junior Bridgman, who was involved in the trade for then Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, is on the line. Junior, how are you today?
How are you? Everything's good.
Everything's
good. Yeah, how are you
doing? You're staying safe and healthy out there. I know you live where, in Louisville?
Yeah, we're in Louisville now, but we're between Louisville and Kansas City. But we got to Louisville, and it seems like they're closing a lot of places, so we're kind of hunkered down here for the time being.
So when you look back on your career, and you were a hell of a player at Louisville, got out in 75, you're the first-round pick, I think eighth overall, and then you're playing in Milwaukee, and you end up you're involved in one of the biggest trades in the history of sports because Lou Alcindor becomes Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's still the leading scorer in the history of the NBA. What was that like for you?
You know, it was somewhat surreal. When they had the draft for those 2 weeks, you thought you were going to be playing in Los Angeles. So that was that in your mind, top of your mind, was going to L.A. and playing for the Lakers. And then you get traded. And the realization of the NBA being a business kind of comes to mind and then or kind of takes over, I should say. But then after that, you really are just happy to have the opportunity to play, and I tell people whether it was Milwaukee or if you had been Anchorage, Alaska, all you wanted to do at that time was have a chance to play in the NBA. It didn't matter, and that's how we approached it. And you know, I went to Milwaukee with three other players, and over time we had some great teams and a lot of great friendships that were formed from that era. So looking back on it, it was meant to be, and I think it worked out very well, really, for both sides. Obviously, Kareem won a lot of championships with the Lakers, but a time that I would not want to trade.
So you also, back then, players did not make a ton of money when they played. Like today, LeBron James is making whatever, $35, $40 million a year, plus making double that in endorsements. But when you were playing, you also had to think about life off the court. And so you started learning from the ground up what it was like to work and learn the business model of Wendy's. And then you end up investing in that franchise. You eventually own over 100 various Wendy's and Chili's. And you're a wildly successful CEO of Bridgman Foods. You became a bottler for Coca-Cola. Had you been a guy making stupid money when you played, do you think you ever would have gone down this path?
You know, I don't think so. I think that you would have thought more about maybe trying to preserve what you made. I've talked to some players, and they're talking about retiring from the league after so many years with, just massive amounts of money. So the whole mindset would have been different. The whole way of approaching everything would have been different. One interesting fact I'll tell you, when I came into the league, the total salary for the Milwaukee Bucks, 12 players and 3 coaches, was $1.8 million.
Wow.
Total salary for 15 guys. And yeah, as you said, who knows what some of these guys make today, and good for them. But you knew going in that you had to do something else when you stopped playing in life. You were not going to make enough money to live on for the rest of your life. So guys would work, including myself, would work various jobs. I mean, I worked at a Howard Johnson for a couple of summers. I worked at an insurance consulting firm. You just did certain things hoping to find that one thing that may be what you'd want to do. But for me, it was more getting indoctrinated into what the business world was, what business was all about.
Before I let you go, I remember your high school team because I got to know Pete Turgovich, who played at UCLA, Tim Stoddard, who pitched for the Chicago Cubs on their 84 National League Division Champion team. Your brother Sam was on the team. And then I coached at Northern Illinois, and I remember Jim Bradley, who came from your area in East Chicago. What was it like having a team like that?
Well, looking back on it, you're somewhat amazed that many talented athletes came from such a small community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people think Jim Bradley might have been the most talented of them all at that time. You know, but obviously Pete was great, and you mentioned Tim was great. But it was one of those things that happens, I tell people, once every 100 years, where a community, an area of only 26,000 people produces so many talented athletes, but at the same time, they grow up together, they play through elementary school all the way up into high school, and then they go on and play in college and have other careers, and you just don't see that often in this country. It was just a special time that, you know, we may not see in the area for another 50 to 100 years.
I really appreciate you taking time. Last thing, I'm a huge horse guy. Are you still on the board of directors at Churchill Downs?
I am. I am. Unfortunately, no Derby in May, but they postponed it until Labor Day right now.
Yep. Hopefully we can get it in by then. Well, yep. I hope I get to meet you because I was always a fan of how you played.
I look forward to meeting you, and just give me a call. We'll make it happen.
All the best.
Thank you.
There you go. Junior Bridgman, involved in one of the biggest NBA trades of all time for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That trade was insane. He was the 8th overall pick in the first round of the 75 draft, and then he was traded by the Lakers with David Myers, Elmore Smith, Brian Winters for Kareem and Walt Wesley. Crazy. And then, of course, Kareem becomes the all-time leading scorer in the history of the sport. 312-332-3776.
I'll say this. Junior Bridgman may not win as the biggest celebrity to call in the contest, but he certainly may win if we did most net worth for anyone to call in the
contest. Oh, dude, he's at a different level, man.
Different level. I Googled. I mean, pretty impressive dude.
Really impressive dude. So I look forward to meeting that guy because I remember watching him play for Louisville for Denny Crum.
Of course you look forward to meeting him. He'll pick up the tab.
Yeah, he can afford it. You own 100 Wendy's and Chili's? Can you imagine?
He owns the plant that bottles Coca-Cola in Canada. Owns the plant.
Yeah, he's a billionaire, man. I think he's a member at, like, Butler Country Club. Like, he's at a different level, dude. 312-332-3776. We catch up with our dear friend, Lou Kanellis. He was close to Michael, the Bulls championship teams. He'll share his stories. That's straight ahead. Next.